Bill Kearney was telling me today that in Israel they have now banned gatherings of more than 10 people. That's Jacob's family, Goosed. Genesis chapter 31. Continuing to look at Jacob, and for 20 years he's been in Paddan Aram. He'd fled from his brother Esau after all the trickery and deception. By this time his own mother has died and he's never to see her again. But after 20 years, God has told him that it is now okay for him to go home. And so he's heading back home as the opportunity arises. We're going to read Genesis 31, and I'll read from verse 15. Genesis 31. Sorry, verse 17. Yeah. Then Jacob put his children and his wives on camels, and he drove all his livestock ahead of him, along with all the goods he had accumulated in Paddan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. When Laban had gone to shear his sheep, Rachel stole her father's household gods. Moreover, Jacob deceived Laban the Aramean by not telling him he was running away. So he fled with all he had, and crossing the river, he headed for the hill country of Gilead. On the third day, Laban was told that Jacob had fled. Taking his relatives with him, he pursued Jacob for 7 days and caught up with him in the hill country of Gilead. And then there's the story of Laban catching up with Jacob, saying his household gods had been stolen, and actually it was Rachel who had taken them, and she sat on them saying it was her time of the month, so she couldn't get up, and his gods were left there. We'll pick it up from 36 when Jacob and Laban confront one another. Jacob was angry. Actually, it is an indignant anger, and that's significant. Jacob was angry and took Laban to task. "What is my crime?" he asked Laban. "What sin have I committed that you hunt me down? Now that you have searched through all my goods, what have you found that belongs to your household? Put it here in front of your relatives and mine, and let them judge between the two of us. I have been with you for 20 years now. Your sheep and goats have not miscarried, nor have I eaten rams from your flocks. I did not bring animals torn by wild beasts. I bore the loss myself. And you demanded payment from me for whatever was stolen by day or night. This was my situation. The heat consumed me in the daytime and the cold at night, and sleep fled from my eyes. It was like this for the 20 years I was with your household. I worked for you for 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flocks, and you changed my wages 10 times. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had not been with me, you would surely have sent me away empty-handed. But God has seen my hardship and the toil of my hands, and last night he rebuked you." Laban answered Jacob, "The women are my daughters, the children are my children, and the flocks are my flocks. All you see is mine. Yet what can I do today about these daughters of mine, or about the children they have borne? Come, now let's make a covenant, you and I, and let it serve as a witness between us." So Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. He said to his relatives, "Gather some stones." So they took stones and piled them in a heap. And they ate there by the heap. Laban called it Jager, Sahadutha and Jacob called it Galeed. Laban said, "This heap is a witness between you and me today." That is why it was called Galeed. It was also called Mizpah, because he said, "May the Lord keep watch between you and me when we are away from each other. If you ill-treat my daughters, or if you take any wives beside my daughters, even though no one is with us, remember that God is a witness between you and me." Laban also said to Jacob, "Here is this heap, and here is this pillar I have set up between you and me. This heap is a witness, and this pillar is a witness, that I will not go past this heap to your side and harm you, and that you will not go past this heap and pillar to my side and harm me. May the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us." So Jacob took an oath in the name of the fear of his father Isaac. He offered a sacrifice there in the hill country and invited his relatives to a meal. After they had eaten, they spent the night there. Early the next morning, Laban kissed his grandchildren and his daughters and blessed them. Then he left and returned home. So it's happened. He's got home. Now, I think I want to summarize what I want to say. Probably should have said that after rather than before. But let me try. 20 years. And God has now said to Jacob, "The time has come, you can go home." And so Jacob doesn't go to his father-in-law Laban and explain that this is what's going to happen, because he's done this before. And Laban has twisted things and persuaded him and got him to stay. And so this time, when God tells him, "The time has come, you can go home," Jacob just gathers his family, gathers his belongings, gathers his flocks, and he flees. He doesn't say anything to Laban, he flees. And maybe there's still a bit of deception Verse 20, Jacob deceived Laban by not telling him he was running away. So there is still deception there in Jacob. But I would actually dare to defend him on this occasion. I think you can understand why he doesn't want to be upfront with Laban. Laban has twisted things before when he said he wants to leave, and has twisted things all his life, or his last 20 years with him. So I can understand why he doesn't be upfront with Laban and runs away. But Laban finds out that Jacob has fled with the family, and so he pursues him and he catches him. And that was why I wanted to call this "Let Down by God." Do you ever feel you've been let down by God? Because here, for almost 20 years, I reckon, certainly for the last 14 years, Jacob has been praying to God, "I want to get out of here." He had his wife. Well, he had two wives, Leah and Rebecca. And he was just under the tyranny of Laban, and he was longing to get back home now. And he'd been praying to God. And now, after 20 years, God has said, "Go, go." And he'd gathered his family. And actually, Rebecca, in stealing the gods, was probably saying to her father, "I feel let down by you. I feel upset by what you've done in oppressing us as a family." And they flee. And I wonder if at that moment, Jacob is exhilarated that God has released us. God has answered my prayers. We're now on our way. We've been saying we'll do this for the last, I don't know how many years, and now God has given us permission and we're on our way. We're going home. And he must have felt exhilarated. And just a few days later, there's Laban. "Whoa. What do you think you're doing?" And Jacob knows, when I've faced this situation before, he's twisted it, he's talked the family out of it, did Jacob feel at that very moment? God, why? Why, when we've got so near to fleeing from this tyranny? Why has Laban turned up pursuing us? Why have you let him catch us? Why is everything falling apart again? And I guess I want to just ask us, if you've ever been in that place where you feel, I've struggled, it looked like God has opened a door, and then suddenly the door seems to slam shut again. And I'm asking God, why? Why? And I was just trying to think of some examples. Did Paul feel God had let him down when he informed the Corinthians that he wanted to come to them? And then as he was preparing to head to them, God closed the door and said, you can't go. And did he feel, God, I've told them I'm coming, and you've closed the door on me, you prevented me from coming? Did he feel God had let him down? But in time, Paul later realized that God had spared him from going to the Corinthians because it would have caused such pain for him to confront the Corinthians at that point, and he explains that in 2 Corinthians chapter 1. When we feel let down by God, wait, and God will give you his answer. Did Mary and Martha feel very let down by Jesus when their brother Lazarus became ill and they sent message, tell Jesus to come, because if he prays for our brother will be healed? And the message was given to Jesus, and Jesus said, we'll go, but wait. And he waited for days. And in this time, Lazarus died and was buried. And it was only 4 days after the burial that Jesus turned up. And did Mary and Martha? Yes, they did. They felt let down and they were breaking their hearts. And they were saying, why did you not come when we called on you to come? Why did you let us down in this way? If you had prayed for our brother, he would have been healed. And now he's been dead for 4 days because you didn't come when we asked. Wait to hear what God is going to say. Because Lazarus was restored to them, but actually God was saying something far greater. Jesus was announcing, I am the resurrection and the life. And more than your brother being restored to you for a few more years, if you come to me, you can know restoration for all of eternity. And God has something far bigger to say in that disappointment. We support BMS World Mission, founded by William Carey. And William Carey had a burden on his heart, a burden on his heart to go to India. And he shared that burden with Christian friends. He shared that burden with his church. And they all said, sit down, William, behave yourself. That's crazy talk. But it didn't leave William Carey. And one or two people caught his vision and supported him and prayerfully supported him. And then he saw an opportunity and he jumped at the opportunity and he got on a ship. And he got on a ship at Southampton that was heading to India. And as the ship sailed from Southampton, William Carey thought, God, this is it. I'm going to do this for you. You've called me to this. And the captain of the ship, as it sailed out of Southampton, found out that William Carey was on this boat and was heading to India to set up Christian work. And the captain of the ship was cynical, like most of his church and other believers had been. And the captain of the ship pulled in at the Isle of Wight and said, "William Carey, off you get. You're not going to India." And threw him off the boat in the Isle of Wight. And William Carey standing there saying, "God, you called me to this. I believe with all my heart you called me to this. And now I'm standing on the Isle of Wight." And he slunk back home. And he was saying, "Why, God? Why did you let me down here?" Wait to hear what God says. As he went back home and he prayed, and he felt God's still small voice saying, "I didn't just call you, William. I called you and your family. And you jumped on that ship, leaving your wife back in England. Take your wife and your family and go." And William Carey's wife was a massive support to him in India. And the work that is BMS World Mission today is because God had a greater plan than Carey's initial thought. Do you know, 10 out of 10 of us are going to sooner or later experience something that makes us question whether God has let us down. And unfortunately, of those 10, which is all of us, I'm not just talking about us in this room, unfortunately many, a big proportion of the 10, shake their fists at God, and quite a number turn away and say, "Well, if that's what you're going to do, God, I'm not sure I believe in you or trust you anymore." But may we be the proportion that says, as Job did, "Though he slay me, though he slay my plans, yet will I trust him." And it's those people who break through and discover that God never did leave them. It's those people who will be restored and will one day declare, "He does all things well. It is well with my soul." God always has a reason. And as Jacob is sitting there thinking, "Why have you allowed Laban to pursue us and catch us?" I think God was saying, "I have unfinished business here." What was God's purpose? Well, I think God wanted to deal with Laban, and I think God wanted to humble Laban. The Rachel stealing the household gods, well, maybe she was having a dig at her father saying, "You've manipulated us, you've tormented us as a family, you've not treated us well. You even deceived me in marrying my sister to Jacob before me." And Laban now loses face before his daughters because Jacob gets the opportunity to put the record straight. And Laban's response to Jacob actually is a tacit admission that everything Jacob was saying to him was true. Laban was humbled. But even then, his old manipulative character comes up again and he says, "All you see is mine." Now, Jacob has taken the flocks that were streaked and speckled and that Laban had said, "These are yours." And then Laban, if you remember, had manipulated everything so that there would be no streaked or speckled flocks, so that Jacob would have nothing. But God intervened, and loads and loads of flocks were streaked and speckled, and Jacob was leaving with a great big flock that was his by right, by agreement, a covenant between him and Laban. And then Laban's got the gall to stand there and say, "See all these flocks? That's my generosity to you. All this is mine, but I've given it to you. But he knows, despite his words, deep down within, he knows he's mistreated Jacob. And Laban stands there humbled, with the record put straight. And I think God just wanted that to be said. But I think even more than wanting to deal with Laban, God wanted to deal with Jacob. And he wanted to give one final chance for Jacob to say what needs to be said. And I think it is worth noting that when you hear Jacob, and he does, he says what he's not dared to say for 20 years, and he says to Laban, "You have been dishonorable. You have mistreated me. I have honored you, and you have treated me in this way, and my family, and you've deceived us." And he's never had the nerve to say it, and now he stands up and he says it. And I wonder if the proverbial lightning bolt hits Jacob at this point. And Jacob thinks, I'm giving him a lecture for deception and for dishonesty and for manipulation. And I'm offended by it. Because for me, this is now a character issue. And I find this offensive. And I wonder if God was saying, yes, Jacob, I'm glad you've said it. And you needed to say it to Laban, because you see the extent to which I have changed you. 20 years ago, you were running away because that was you. You were the deceptive one. You were the dishonest one. You were the manipulative one. And now you stand here declaring how offended by it you are in Laban. I am changing you, Jacob. And before you go home, I want you to know that. And I think that was the unfinished business that God had with Jacob. And so the line is now drawn. The covenant is agreed. Laban is no longer going to be a thorn in Jacob's side. And God says, go home. Go home, Jacob. God always has a plan, even when we look at things and don't understand why. We may have to think creatively over the next weeks and months. You may find the government telling you in the next few days that if you're over 70, you really shouldn't be coming to church. Do we stand here saying, God, why are you letting me down? Why are you doing this? Or do we say, I'm going to wait? I'm going to pray. And I'm going to hear what God says. Because he that is in us is greater than he that is in the world. And God, you have your reasons. And you will do what you will do. And Lord, it will be for your glory. And my response is, though he devastate our plans, though our vision plan does not proceed in the way that we thought it would, though our church meeting on Wednesday will have a different focus than we thought it might, yet I will praise him, because he will do what he will do, and what he will do is greater than anything I thought of. Do you know what I want to ask us to do? I want to ask us, just in groups of however many you want to get together, keep your distance. But just pray. Just pray. And Greg, just when you feel it's right, would you just start to lead us in song? But let's just Pray. Pray together. Pray for one another. Pray for the glory of God. And pray that we will be a people of trust, not fear. Amen.